for WKU Public Radio and NPR One. I'm Lamont Jack Pearlie, and this is the African American Folklorist. In segment two, Michael spoke about the black story not being monolithic, the cost of speaking up against injustice, and the loss of black economies. On this segment, Michael shares with us the blues music and artists of Russellville, the Chitlin' Circuit, and how black folk has to fix black folk in our own communities. I have to ask you about the blues, right? Because I'm a blues man. I love the blues. I love acoustic traditional blues and even some electric blues.
Mm-hmm.
What blues was played and came out of Russellville?
Well, you had a lot of artists that played blues and stuff out of Russellville. We ended up having the Marianne Fisher Blues Concert.
Mm.
And for people who don't know, she was a headliner with Ray Charles. But
right.
She was adopted by a woman named City Meredith in Russellville. And as a kid, my aunt would always tell us, I went to Knob City High School, which was a segregated high school in Russellville, with a woman that sang with Ray Charles. And we would mess with my aunt. We'd laugh and say, Dinky didn't have two men. We would mess with her. God rest her. So I wish she was living so I could apologize to her. But anyway, one day I was at home, and the phone rang. And this woman said, can I speak to Queenie? Now, my aunt's name was Queenie, but she didn't like it. And she said, my grandmother got drunk the day she named her Queenie. And so I said, Dink, I said, this woman on the phone, she wants you. And she said she won't speak to Queenie. She said the same thing. She said, I told y'all Belle was drunk when she named me Queenie. So she get on the phone, and it was Marianne Fisher.
Wow.
So I never paid her no attention because I didn't know who she was. I was probably about 16, maybe 17. But years later, I was with Mike Goff and Mr. Clark, and they were talking about doing a blues thing in Russellville, and I was telling them about Marianne Fisher.
Mm.
So what we came up with was a Marianne Fisher Blues Concert Series, and we started having these blues concerts in honor of Marianne Fisher.
Wow.
And, you know, it turned out well. Out of that, we started getting other stories about blues people and people who sang there in different groups, and one of them was a guy named James Tice, and actually happened in Bowling Green at the Kwanzaa Hut, mm-hmm. which was to be a place they would go and play. I think Ray Charles is up here to play, and he needed a headliner band to play for him. And the story went that he got a Robert Phillips band, the House Rockers, which James Heiss, who lived in Russellville across the street from me and was my cousin, to play, to open up for Ray Charles.
Wow.
And they were practicing, and they said James Heiss, and he two-thirds in the wind, and had him a drink or two, and said they were practicing, and said that Ray Charles, them, they were playing, and James Heiss would keep on, and he'd get up and say, flat. And they said he'd done that two or three times. Said about the fourth time he got to do it, Ray Charles jumped out the stage on top of him. But this whole area had a lot of blues. Guthrie was part of the Chitlin' Circuit, Bowling Green. So we had a lot of blues artists through that, and that kind of defined the area because you had all these clubs and joints. And I tell people all the time, people don't like to talk about that, but you cannot talk about the black community without talking about the clubs and the joints.
That's right.
Because if you do, you're telling half of a story.
Yes, sir.
And these places played such an important part in these communities. So what we're hoping to do at SEEK, if not this year, next year, we're hoping to open an exhibit telling about the joints and clubs and the areas and the bands and things of that nature.
Oh, man, that would be huge because, you know, it's always portrayed as if, you know, the Chitlin' Circuit should be something to be ashamed of. That's one of the reasons why I love Bobby Rush, because he says to this day he's the king of the Chitlin' Circuit.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And this was black culture, black tradition, but it was also a black economy, right?
A black economy. And it showed a black a group of black people. Like I said, I lived right beside a hall when I was a kid, and then right beside across from the joint when I was a kid.
Okay.
So I'd get up at night and sit in the window and watch them. Man, the class our people had then compared to now is just totally different. Those women would be sharp, and men would be in suits. You know, I loved to watch it. And then, like, the men, the gambling people, they pull up in these big Cadillacs. it showed a different community than we do now with our pants sagging and,
right,
you know, we had a little class in my mind.
Well, you know, and I've had the honor to be able to speak to several people of, I guess you could say, the Black Warren County area.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be a recurring story that at one time it was this, and then it just kind of diminished.
Yeah.
Now, in Jonesville, you know, you can say, well, urban renewal totally destroyed the community. I guess you could say gentrification and that's coming and different things like that. Any other reasons you think that this kind of happened, this change in how the people, I guess you could say, respected themselves even in whatever walk of life they were in?
Well, like you said, urban renewal, gentrification, but what a lot of our people don't want to admit is that once segregation came, we didn't feel our communities were good enough for us.
Mm.
You know, again, I go back to the Jeffersons. When you look at George, them, they moved on up to a deluxe apartment in the sky. But let's say if George had stayed in the Black community, that was a person, a businessman in that community. And the same thing with Good Times and Keith, the pro football, they get out.
That's right.
Well, let's say if Keith had stayed, that's somebody with an income in their community. What has happened is that our best and brightest has decided that our communities wasn't good enough for them, so they left them.
Mm.
And then they argued, well, they gentrified. No, well, yeah, they did gentrify them, but y'all left them. They wasn't good enough. Usually what happens is when our best and brightest leave, there's nobody there but the old and the poor and the infirm.
Right.
You know, so again, you have to fight for these communities. We have to start fighting for our communities. Other groups do. Again, other ethnic groups do it.
They do.
How many other ethnic groups do you see do to their communities what we do to ours?
I can't. I want to say, but I can't say I've seen it.
Exactly. The best example of that is, in my community, 90% of the people who come to my neighborhood don't live in my neighborhood.
Mm.
But they feel it's all right to come in my neighborhood to do what's wrong.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then they don't think you ought to say nothing.
Right.
And they don't own nothing there.
Right, right, right.
You see what I'm saying?
I do.
And you sometimes want to know what's on their mind.
Right.
You bought you a house. You bought your business. You did in this neighborhood. Then I come in front of your house and do everything I can that's bad and wrong.
Mm.
And I tell you, say, you shouldn't even say nothing. And if you do say something, you know what you are? You're a snitch.
Right, right, right.
Is something going on wrong in our young people's minds where they're not seeing this thing very clearly?
Well, do you think, and I come, as much as a blues man that I am, I come up in the hip-hop generation.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen the multiple changes from 77 to now, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think media, music, entertainment, all these things are projecting a lifestyle or a mindset that is perpetuating what we're discussing now?
I think they help, and I think it's a part of it, but I also think that we have dehumanized our people.
Mm.
We have done the same thing that the slave master has done.
Mm.
And instead of being perpetuated by whites, now it's perpetuated by blacks.
Mm.
Is that if the way the slave owner was able to murder and separate families and do all these bad things, he dehumanized those people. He said they were animals.
Right.
And because they were animals, you could shoot an animal and then make them different than but animals.
Right.
Well, the same thing is happening with young people in these black communities. They dehumanize us. We're nothing. We're nobody. So you got a bunch of fools running around with guns thinking it's all right to kill our people because they're nothing.
Mm.
It's all right to go to our community and do all these bad things. Who's down there? Just black people, and they're nothing.
Mm.
See, it's a mind frame that we, I guess, it's kind of like an inferior complex.
Right.
Woodson says it better. When you determine that a man shall think, you ain't got to worry about what he's going to think about.
That's right.
When you make a man feel inferior, you don't have to force him to accept inferior status. He will demand it.
Mm.
Well, a lot of these young people have demanded inferior status by doing these bad things in our neighborhoods and to our people.
Mm.
Woodson was talking about in terms probably going in back doors and things. But the modern part of that is violence that our people are perpetuating on each other. You got black communities where all the people in the neighborhood are scared to come out because they don't know what's going to happen. When somebody get killed, nobody speaks up. Well, that's the same thing the slave master done.
Right.
It's the exact same thing. It's just being done by black folk now.
Right, right.
And the saddest part, I guess in my mind, is that the black church is not speaking out. The black leaders. See, the problem we got to fix is not white folk right now. The problem we got to fix is us.
Yes, sir.
We got to start working in our neighborhoods and working on us.
Yes, sir. Now, I have to ask you, because those that I see in on the global stage, when they say something similar, they're attacked by black pop culture icons, right? Do you get pushback from black people when you say this?
Get a lot of pushback, but who cares? Like I tell them, I got diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol. I got 1 foot in the grave. Forget them. I was at an 8th August meeting the other day, and somebody didn't want to have 8th August, which is the Emancipation Celebration in Russellville, because they were scared at how the white people would act. They didn't want to name theme Black Lives Matter because they were scared how white folk would act. And like I told them, and I'll tell anybody else, I'm not turning back. I'm in the fight to win. What I got to lose? I'm on home anyway. I'm fighting. So I don't care what they do. If I think I'm right, I'm going to stand up for it, and that's just it. And I just hope and pray that I have sense enough to know when I'm wrong.
Right.
Or is there somebody around that respect me enough to tell me that I'm wrong and
right.
Let me see it.
Right. I feel you. I'll bring it to a close because I could ask the questions all day. But maybe we can get you back up here. What do you want people, black and white, what do you want them to receive from your works, and what do you want them to receive from the, memorabilia that you've collected and are continuing to collect that's sitting in the museum?
Well, we want to tell this story. We want them to see the story. We want to tell the story of Walker Blackburn, the first black man who lived in Russellville that was allowed to arrest white people in Kentucky. He was the first deputy U.S. Marshal, him and Pete Kennedy of Henderson. Kennedy quit after a couple of months. He was at a farm practice, shot a pistol, almost hit a white woman, so he resigned. But Blackburn stayed for, I think, about a year. But just think, in 1897, he was the first black in the state of Kentucky allowed to arrest white people. Now, don't you think he had to have a little moxie to do it?
Oh, yeah.
You see what I'm saying? You know, you talk about Dunnigan, and you talk about the different people who paved the way for other people. We have to tell these stories. And these people, this wasn't no easy fight. Like I tell a lot of young people in our neighborhood, it's easy for you to beat up each other who are black. But get out there and start fighting some of these problems and you get your real fight.
Yeah.
get your real fight. See, one more point I'd like to make is that a lot of people miss, and this is what really kills or hurts our communities. Black leaders, let's say if you got people quote unquote call themselves a leader, well, they'll stand up for Breonna Taylor because that's an easy fight.
Right.
You can say, I'm against that, that was wrong, blah, 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 blah. But most of them won't stand up for these fights that you have to have in these black communities. Because you have to put some skin in the game.
Right.
You don't know who's going to show up to kill you in your sleep, and you don't know if they're going to be black or white.
Right.
So to fight these fights in these neighborhoods, these are actually hard fights. Only way you can fight them, only way I've been able to fight them through faith in God.
Yes, sir.
You just have to hope and pray that he'll get you up that morning and get you home that night.
No, that's real. I have to ask you this one last question based on what you just said. And it's slightly similar to the previous question, but more so in general of the big picture. Do you have more problems with black folk, with what you're doing and trying to encourage? Are they receptive? Is it black people that's giving you more problems, or is it white people, or is it universities?
Well, again, if you understand the fight in the black community, see, a lot of people never fought in these communities.
Correct.
Let me give you an example. Years ago, we were trying to get the park fixed up in Russellville. And when it started out, it was 100 of us. And it was about 3 weeks or 2 weeks for the council meeting. By the time the second week got in there, it was 50 of us. About time the week of the council meeting, it was probably 35 of us. About time we got to the council meeting, it was 25 of us, and 15 of them was with them.
Wow. I hear you.
You see what I'm saying? These fights are actually hard fights because a lot of our people figure they want to be on the winning team. They're not necessarily going to be for what's right.
Right. What's comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't want to lose. So all you have to do is get them over here. And so, again, you have to fight these battles through faith. You just have to get up and hope and pray that God is on your side and that you can get through it.
Mm. Well, we appreciate you, sir. Mm-hmm. And thank you for coming down.
Yeah, I appreciate you.
Thank you for listening. For more on the Sikh Museum, please visit www.sikhmuseum.org. For WKU Public Radio and NPR One, I'm Lamont Jack Prairie.